This is Windows Observer Launch Control. We are just seconds away from the start of the Observe Tech podcast. Stand by for final sequencing and launch. In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And we have launch of the Observe Tech podcast. Keeping an eye on Windows and other things tech, here is your host, Richard Hay of WindowsObserver.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 80 of the Observe Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Rich Hay from WindowsObserver.com. This podcast is being recorded on 14 February. Happy Valentine's Day to all of you lovers out there. We got a lot of news to cover. We're going to repeat some Surface news. Not repeat it, but we're going to keep talking about Surface because they had an interesting opening weekend this past weekend. And then we're going to cover a whole lot of other items that we've got lined up for you. So just want to remind everybody as we get kicked off that we are a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network, techpodcast.com. If it's tech, it's there. So please check out techpodcast.com. All right, let's start talking a little bit about Surface. Now, you know, last week we had a really heavy-duty Surface episode. Well, this past weekend, Saturday, was the release date, 9 February, for the Surface Pro. Now, Surface Pro, for those of you who might not be aware, is different from Surface RT, which released back in October of last year, in that RT is Windows, but it's a very limited subset of Windows. You can't run all the other software that's out there for Windows. Well, Surface Pro is a full-blown PC. It runs all software for Windows. It's an x86-based PC. So there are no limitations when it comes to what software it can run. If it can run on your normal desktop Windows-based computer, it will run on Surface Pro. So a lot of anticipation for this device. The reviews were very middle of the road, as we discussed a couple episodes ago. But it looked like there was a pretty decent response to it. A lot of people went looking for it. That's when all the news started to break on Twitter and other places talking about stock issues and how many were in each store. And I did my own little bit of research here around my area. I've got a couple stores nearby and found out that my local Staples had very limited supply, didn't even have a 128, I think. The local Best Buy also only got one or two of the devices. And by the time I called them a couple hours into their day on Saturday, they were sold out. They were all gone. And that started to become the trend across Twitter. I did contact my local, my closest Microsoft store, which is in Orlando, and they had stock down there. And in fact, there were some pictures floating around Twitter of them and the line that they had outside, and didn't hear much about people having to be turned away. I know a good friend of mine got on there, got in line, and got her Surface Pro. So they were available. It was just spotty. It seemed like the Microsoft stores had the most stock, and it seemed like the 64 gig Surface Pros were quite available in most situations, but most people didn't want the 64. Most of them wanted the 128, it seems. So a lot of beating up on Microsoft this past weekend of how they handled the launch, how they didn't have enough stock out there. I don't know how the procedure works, but I believe Best Buy and Staples dictates what they get, what they order from the manufacturer. And if they didn't order enough because they were kind of bit by Surface RT sales, then that may very well be why there were limited stocks out there in the Best Buy and Staples stores. So we did know that it was limited. I wrote up that story, and that got picked up by a couple different sites, so that was awesome. And then also online and through Best Buy's website and Staples' website, they were showing out of stock, even on the Microsoft Store website. So lots of issues with availability, a lot of stories of people logging on right at midnight on Friday night, right at midnight when it became 9 February, and within a very short period of time, most were able to place their orders, but many reported later having issues, especially those that chose to wake up first thing in the morning and order them. So that definitely some stock issues. Now, the other thing that happened over the weekend was the debut of the new Surface Pro commercial. Now, we wrote about this last week. It did debut as expected during the Grammys, and it was directed by John Chu. In fact, you'll recognize the lead guy in it because he was the same guy who the Surface RT commercial opens up on, where he's clicking together the keyboard and Surface RT. Well, same thing here, except the format is what's supposed to be a corporate boardroom or meeting room, and it shows people doing productivity things, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint, and still a lot of dancing on the tables and things of that nature, and a little bit of beatboxing and all that. But, you know, those commercials are meant to draw attention and just get a name in your head, not necessarily show that that's the way you should use the device. But it was definitely taken with a enterprise-type slant. So the commercial came out. We've got a link and a post to that. And then the other thing I did was I found this awesome tweak through a website called WinSource, who sourced it to the XDA developers forums. And what it was is some people had discovered that if they had their touch cover or type cover closed and hit the power button on their Surface RT and then open the keyboard, they would temporarily get four rows of icons on the start screen, four rows of tiles. And a lot of people liked it, but after a reboot or if you open an app or went to the desktop and went back, it was gone. It was back to normal three rows of tiles for the start screen. Well, I did a little research to see about making that permanent, and I found the tweak. And so I wrote up a post to share that tweak from WinSource and XDA forums. And then with the help of Freddie Fuentes, my friend north of the border, we were able to figure out how to make it work for the Surface Pro because he had gone out and purchased the Surface Pro. So we were able to also figure out the tweak for that, wrote up a couple of very popular blog posts, and a lot of folks have downloaded the file so far. What I did was I explained how to create the file in the post for either Surface RT or Surface Pro, but I also included ready-made registry files for each situation so that you can get, basically with RT, you can get four rows of tiles on the start screen, or on the Surface Pro, you can either get four or you can get five, and it's two different files to make that happen. So if you're interested in getting a little more organizational ability, I really like the way the four rows of tiles on the RT allow me to have a better layout, in my opinion, and still be able to see things fine. The one thing you will notice is the on-screen keyboard is a little smaller, but it is not unusable by far. So it's a very popular tweak, and I think a lot of people are going to like going from three to four. In fact, next week while I'm on Microsoft Redmond campus and doing the MVP thing, I plan on talking that up to people and showing them that file when they're showing off their RTs or their pros so that they can try to experience that as well. So we're hoping to get a lot of testing out of that. So thanks to Freddie. I said this once on Twitter and I said it in the post, but thanks to Freddie for helping figure out how to make that work on the Pro, because the default way that goes with the RT does not work. All right, what else have we got coming up? All right, into the news stack, Microsoft Tech Student MSDN blog was five tips for up-and-coming app developers. And so I wanted to run down that list with you. This MSDN blog is focused on tech students and how, you know, those that are learning to develop, whether it be gaming or other types of apps. And so they composed this post to talk about making games good. The first hint that he gives is it's got to be good on touch. I mean, in this day and age, touch is everything, it seems. So you got to make sure that it's good on touch. Collaboration, make it a priority. So, you know, you want to make sure that you collaborate not only on the game development piece, but maybe even on the gaming side, on the participant side, because the more a game is interactive, it's why Xbox is so popular. It's why PlayStation is so popular, because it makes it easy to find others to play similar games. And people like playing. Why do you think the word games, like Words with Post, Words with Friends, Alpha Jacks, the reason they're so popular is we get to play against another person, not just another computer. So it really puts mind against mind, and people like to do gaming like that. When you're working on your game, it says be specific about your audience. You know, target the right audience with your game to something that's going to be attractive to them and going to be entertaining to them. Start small. One great way to don't start with the great, big, huge project as the way to get going and developing games, but start with something small and then build from there. Whether you build up from that one small thing and you continually build and grow that, or you build a small game of some type, an app, learn some programming and coding techniques, and then take that to another type of game and keep moving up the ladder until you do finally create that massively multiplayer online game or something like that. And then the last tip is if you're wanting to get your foot in the door at Microsoft, build what you love. And this fits in with something I used to say all the time during my career in the Navy. Do things you're passionate about. One, they're going to be funner to do because you're passionate about it. So it's something you believe in. It's something you love. It's something you enjoy doing. So why not work with something you're passionate about? and the work will come easier. It won't seem like a drudgery. It won't seem like you have to drag yourself out of bed in the morning to go to work, because it is something you enjoy and it's something you love. I get being a that guys are coders and programmers, and that just doing that is something that drives you. But make sure you're building something that you're passionate about too. I think you'll maintain your interest longer, and you're not just checking off the blocks. You actually are doing something you're really, really passionate about. So those are some great tips for those of you that might be entering the world of gaming programming or just programming in general. That could fit in so many different things. I could say about blogging, about running your own website, and run down that same list, and those kind of ideas would fit. Do things you're passionate about. Start small. Don't shoot for your target audience. Don't try to go too broad with the idea, because it might just not penetrate the right level that it needs to. So you could change that programming to gaming to blogging to whatever you want to call it. You could change that so many different ways, and all those things would simply work. They would apply to that thing you're undertaking. Along with all the other Surface news we talked about, the Surface blog finally appeared. Panos Panes kicked it off with the first one, a nice welcome, talking about the upcoming Surface Pro that was getting ready to be released. He posted this 2 days before it was due to be out in the retail market. His first post has already got about 90 comments on it. But the other part of the issue is that he also had to very quickly get on the Surface blog after this weekend and all the issues that popped up with inventory and the issues people had in finding themselves a Surface Pro device. And he had to get on there very quickly after that and talk about availability. In fact, he did it a few days later after appearing on the weekly Windows chat. They were talking about Surface Pro, and somebody challenged him about the stock levels and making sure they had that right. And we got a blog post up on the blog about that on Windows Observer. And then, of course, today, 13 new countries have now got access to Surface RT. So that is expanded. Let's see. That is Austria, Belgium, Denmark, Finland, Ireland, Italy, Luxembourg, the Netherlands, Norway, Portugal, Spain, Sweden, and Switzerland can now purchase their own RTs, and you go to Surface.com to get that process going. So this is a continuation of the phased rollout of Surface RT into new markets, and I'm sure Pro's going to follow later. A lot of people asked him at the chat on Tuesday afternoon about the Pro and its availability and when it's going to be in Europe and other countries like that, because right now Surface Pro is only available in the U.S. and Canada. All right. Next thing, excuse me. Oh, this great post from EdBot on ZDNet. Many of you will know and remember a couple weeks ago, all this ruckus that was caused about storage space on Surface Pro, whether it be 64 gig or 128 gig, and we've talked about it on this podcast before. People making a molehill out of an anthill, in my opinion, but EdBot did an awesome blog post called Surface Pro versus MacBook Air, talking about who's being dishonest with storage space. Because when you really get down to the nitty and gritty, what's offered on a MacBook Air is less than what's offered on a Surface Pro of the same configuration. So you got to go read Ed's post. It's very technical from the perspective that he really did his homework. He really has all his data. He's got his charts. It shows how much space is available. But I'll give you a quick bottom line from the main graphic on here. And this is the Surface Pro 128 versus the MacBook Air 128 and how much free space you'll get, okay? So this is with recovery partitions in place, and it is as they arrive. They're stock, okay? On a MacBook Air 128, you'll have 99.5 gigabytes of space left free for your user data, and on Surface Pro, you'll have 89.7 available for user data. So the difference there of 10 gig, are we really having this big discussion and ruckus about 10 gigabytes of storage space? The great thing about Surface Pro, it's got the micro SD card slot. You can add more memory and more storage dynamically and just keep swapping cards. Or as we're going to talk about in a story later on in this podcast, about your ability to install apps and stuff onto that card as well. You don't necessarily have to install them on the SSD, on the system drive for Surface. So we're going to talk about that in a minute, but please go check out Ed's post and read up on storage space. If you've had your fill of storage space issues, then we can move on. You know, it's got plenty of storage space when you add in the cloud and all these other things. Now, maybe it's lending itself to a discussion of how we advertise and document storage space when it comes to devices. But the norm and habit has always been to advertise the size, especially with these things that we call tablets and something like Surface, which is a real crossover kind of device. We talk about its full maximum capability, not how much you're going to end up with once you set the system up. We've just never done that. I'm sorry. We call it the 128 gigabyte iPad. We call it the 64 gigabyte iPad. We call it the 64 gigabyte Surface RT. We call it the 32 gigabyte Surface RT. We call it the 128 gigabyte Surface Pro. It's how we do it. We never did that with desktops. We never described a desktop as a Dell HP Pro 1185 320 gigabyte. We've just never done that. And now we're in a different realm. I wrote about that. Maybe we got to change our definition of what we think a tablet is. But we have never, ever spent that kind of time tied up around storage space on tablets. So I think it's time we move on. It really is. All right, the next thing I want to mention is Spotify. Windows Phone Blog talks about Spotify. One of the big apps finally made its way to Windows Phone 8. So that is available for all of you that have been looking. It's another big name to check off the list. It's one of those top apps that are out there that hadn't gotten to Windows Phone yet, but now it is. This past week, Apple released the new iOS 6.1 update. It's been getting farmed out there pretty well, pretty good pace for users who are downloading it. But as they've done that, they've discovered some issues. There's some iPhone users are seeing battery drain and overheating issues after that upgrade. And we also, you may have heard about this Exchange bug for people who are using the iPhone 6.1, iOS 6.1 to connect to Exchange. It was causing major, major issues on the Exchange side and causing servers to get locked up and really get occupied with trying to focus on these iPhones connecting. Well, Apple has since come out and said, yep, we acknowledge it. There is an issue. We're going to fix it. We're going to issue an update. But Microsoft recommended that you block iOS 6.1 if it is causing a huge detriment to your Exchange server. But again, when's the last time, you know, that you've experienced those major type of issues with an iOS release? So, you know, is quality control changed on that end? What's going on that's introducing all these issues that weren't apparent? Now, I get it. We have our share of issues with Windows. It always has been, always will be, and will continue to be. But we deal with them, we face them, and we move on. But this is not something we're used to seeing from Apple, in my opinion. It's not something we usually see that things come out with very obvious and issues like battery drainage and, of course, the Exchange bug when it comes to email. So we'll be keeping an eye on that as well. All right, the next thing I wanted, a couple great AMAs happened this week. The first one I want to mention is SpaceX. I'll put up a link to the software engineers from SpaceX had a Reddit Ask Me Anything, and the one response you got from the team was that learn C++ and they'll take you to Mars in 5 years. That's what they're looking for from folks. They are looking for folks who had that kind of programming capability, because obviously any kind of mission to Mars of people is going to have to be self-sustaining because it is so far away from backup and help. So that was one of the great AMAs that happened this week. And the other one was Bill Gates. Bill Gates did an AMA. I didn't even know this thing was coming. I hadn't heard anything about it. But Bill Gates, he did a great intro video to the AMA that highlights some of the most popular questions he tends to get asked as a billionaire and all that kind of stuff. And so if you go to GeekWire, we'll put the link on the page. You can see the kind of questions he got asked and responses he got. And I thought for the most part, these were great questions. It really was, really kind of helped you focus on what he's working on now, his philanthropy, and all the things he's wanting to take on and spend his money now that he earned through his years at Microsoft to do good in the world. So very interesting reading, so I highly encourage you to go check that out, because that's one of those, you know, what do you call it? Those once in maybe a lifetime, because, you know, when are you ever going to get Bill Gates on a Reddit AMA for the first time and be able to ask those kind of questions? So go check that out. That was some very interesting reading, to say the least. Okay, Twitter. You know, Twitter finally, it looks like they've got that sequence working for you to get your archive. And let me tell you, that was fun. I finally got my archive last week. And I was able to go in there and I was able to look at my first tweets, actually my second first tweets, because I originally joined Twitter under the handle Windows Observer. And back in that day, you couldn't change your handle. So I eventually decided to come off of Windows Observer, and then I rejoined Twitter as WinOBS, which I've had since 14 July of 2008. Well, it's interesting to go back there and read your first tweets, or to go back in your history and when things were occurring in your life or in the world, and see how you were responding to them on Twitter compared to how you do it now. I think we all have become better Twitterers for the most part over time. We improve with age and experience, but it is quite fun. I think it would be a neat project to go collect first tweets from people and put them into a Tumblr or something like that and share them and see people's reaction to that. I think that would be pretty neat. Okay, you all don't do that. I'm going to do that myself, all right? So that's a project I'm going to take on. All right, now, speaking of Twitter and the archives. Now, we all know Twitter does not have an official Windows 8 app. Now, they did recently release an update to TweetDeck for the Windows system. So if you're using TweetDeck for Windows, you can start that up. You'll get prompted to download an update, and you'll be able to get it. And then according to the Twitter guy that answered me on Twitter, it's an improvement in speed, keyboard shortcuts, and a few other tweaks. I did ask him about a spell check, because spell check is not present in this version and update. He did say they are working on it. It's a bit tough to bring to bear, but they are definitely working on it, but he didn't give me a specific time frame. So we know Twitter's working on a spell check for the official Windows TweetDeck app, but we're still waiting on the official Windows 8 Modern or Metro app, as it's called. Now, I had an interesting tweet exchange with Tom Warren from The Verge, and he said, you know, I use TweetDeck in IE10 on my Surface RT sometimes, because it just gives me so many more options and ability to do stuff on Twitter. And he said somebody needs to put that in a Modern framework, and that would be a great app. So maybe Twitter is working to translate that into a Modern interface with a Metro kind of look. We'll have to wait and see. Been a few months now since Twitter announced that they were going to have a new Twitter app for Windows 8. So we'll be having to keep an eye on that for sure. All right, so I still haven't told my story, have I? All right, the reason for this story is that although we don't have all those things, we don't have an official Windows 8 app, guess what we do have with Twitter? Apparently, it's got LOL cat language. So you can go to Twitter, make a change, and all of your tweets would be interpreted using LOL cat language, whatever that is. They say things like, "K, thanks, bye," "option," I don't know, "oh, hi." I'd love to see some official apps and official app improvement instead of laugh out LOL cat language, wouldn't you? Anyway, that took me a long time to finally get there, didn't it? All right, the next thing, 5 tips to stretch your smartphone or tablet battery life. Now, many of these, for you that are experienced and been on mobile platforms for a while, will make total sense, but there may be somebody out there that may want to help maximize their battery life on their mobile devices. So this story from Information Week Mobility comes from Eric Zeman. And he suggests, one, lowering the screen brightness. That's a good setting to save some battery. Using your wireless radio, your Wi-Fi sparingly. Some people turn on Wi-Fi all the time. I don't. I only turn on Wi-Fi when I need it. Turn off notifications. Of course, that kind of kills some of the benefit of these smartphones and mobile devices. But if you got to save some battery and you're desperate and you don't have a charge in sight, then definitely turn off notifications. Another one is location services. And then, of course, set your email syncs and other data less often. So if you have the ability to control how often your email or your cloud or whatever it is syncs with your device, you know, reduce the amount of time between that, and obviously you will save battery power because it won't be doing that function as much as possible. So like I said, they're kind of common sense tips in a lot of way, but sometimes it helps to be reminded of the benefits that are available to us by just a few simple steps and maybe things we just forget about. All right, moving on down the line, a great how-to geek post. This one I mentioned earlier, but he provides a step-by-step on how to install Windows Store apps on an SD card or another drive on your Windows machine or your Surface machine. So if you are looking for a means to manage your storage spaces, you can go to that post and you can check those steps out. Yesterday was the 13th of February. You know what that means, right? That means mesh is done. Services for mesh were turned off last night. It's no longer available. You need to be on SkyDrive now. And if you didn't get your data off, you may be out of luck. But yesterday was the drop dead date for live mesh retiring. And so you need to be on SkyDrive doing your business. Rest in peace, Live Mesh. Live Mesh was a great app. Live Mesh worked extremely well. It had, you know, it allowed you to sync whatever folder on the hard drive you wanted. It didn't have to be in a specific directory like the SkyDrive sync is now. You know, there are ways around it. I think I've blogged about ways to use the libraries function to bring your stuff back into what appears to be your documents, pictures, and all those kind of folders. So there are flexible options for being able to do that. And honestly, SkyDrive is much more robust and capable than Live Mesh was. And there's a lot of those remoting features you can get through other means. But the reality is Live Mesh is done. So if you're not off of it, well, I guess you are now because it's not working, so you have to make the move. You may have seen the story about Flickr and a little privacy issue that they had recently. They came out and revealed that there was a period of time if you had private photos marked on Flickr that they were exposed to public eyes. So you may want to go read that story, find the dates, and see if you have any issues with photos that may have been shared inappropriately. Home Depot. You know, BlackBerry just made a huge announcement a couple weeks ago about their new BlackBerry 10, their new phone, the Z10 and the Q10. But big news this week was Home Depot are dropping 10,000 BlackBerries from their employees. They're moving to iPhones. They're choosing iPhones to move to, but 10,000 BlackBerries. So they're not even going to stick around for BlackBerry 10. They're moving on. And it was interesting to see some news earlier today that a couple former ex-CEOs of RIM, the Research in Motion, which is now BlackBerry, completely sold off their shares of stock on the company, just completely have bailed on it. So interesting to watch that happen and see what's going on there. But, you know, those guys have had that stock for a while. They've been ex-CEOs for a while. You know, why is it they're opting out now all of a sudden? Maybe it's just that Outlook is not looking very good for BlackBerry 10. All right, Xbox news. This was a great article from Kip Knerskin from Liveside.net. Recently this past week, Yusuf Mehdi, which is the Senior Vice President of Interactive Entertainment Business for Microsoft, and Nancy Tellem, which is the Corporate Vice President of the Microsoft LA Studios, which is the content arm now of the Xbox Live Network, gave out some numbers, did some talking during the Dive Into Media conference that was happening under Wall Street Journal and All Things Digital this past week. But some numbers that were revealed that they talked about is one, 76 million Xboxes have been sold. That's up from 70 million this past September. 46 million Xbox Live accounts, and that's up from 40 million in September. 24 million Kinects, that's up from 20 back in September. Some stats, 38% of Xbox users are women. 51% are people who have kids. The Xbox use is at an average of 87 hours per month. There's been a 51% year-over-year growth in the entertainment usage, and we're just over our first year of the entertainment piece of Xbox being there. Basically, number one device for entertainment in the living room, said it has over 100 entertainment partners. They love the relationship with Netflix, and they consider they are a premium brand with a premium service. So I'll send you to Kip's post about this, and you can read to the links on all the details of what they talked about. But in, you know, we're about to approach a very major period of time with the gaming consoles because we're looking at next gens. There's no doubt the next gen of Xbox and the next gen of PlayStation are coming. In fact, in 6 days, next Wednesday, PlayStation is supposedly announcing details of their next gen console. So it'll be interesting to watch that and see what happens. I will be up in Redmond from Microsoft MVP Summit next week around a lot of my Xbox buddies, and I will be watching that very closely, I'm sure, with a lot of folks on campus to see what they have got to say. Who do you think the number one company is for corporate reputation? Now, for a long time, it was Apple. But the recent report from GeekWire by Todd Bishop said that Amazon is now considered the number one company based on reputation for that company. So that is the first time they've beat Apple, and then behind them are Disney and Google. So things are changing in that realm as well. How about Dropbox? I know Dropbox is an alternative to SkyDrive, and you know, up to anybody who they want to use, what they want to use. But I think Dropbox is starting to try to make an end into the corporate world because they recently added a console for an administrator to kind of watch over a team that has access to Dropbox and to help control the flow of data and things from that. So even even Dropbox is getting into the market of having the ability to manage things on an enterprise level. I mean, they're calling this an admin console, but it would allow them to manage a group of people, a team, and how they handle the data. So it's interesting to see that coming down. If you are not a member of Dropbox, this story broke this week. If you are not a member of Dropbox, new accounts are getting, I want to say, a 50 gigabyte account on Dropbox. So if you're not a member yet, why not sign up and grab that storage and have it available? No harm in having it. You don't have to go use it right now. Again, no harm at all in doing that. This story broke this past week as well. This was from ZDNet, from Matthew Miller. Something called BlueStacks. Now, I've heard of BlueStacks before. I ran it on Windows 7, and I found it to be horrible. But BlueStacks gives you the ability to run Android apps on a Windows-based system. It's got its pros and cons. You know, I get the idea of being able to access apps that we don't have in Windows yet or Windows Phone, but there are some payoffs, there are some trade-offs in being able to do that, and this story is an excellent post about that and how that can impact that. So if you're interested in giving that a shot, go for it, but again, your mileage may vary, your performance may vary on that. From my buddy Dave McCabe over at Surface Geeks, the Microsoft Store is offering $100 store credit on any $699 or higher PC purchase. Now, this story broke earlier this week, and everybody was thinking, oh, go buy a Surface Pro, that's a PC, and get a certificate for $100 to spend somewhere else in the store. You could apply that to a touch or type cover and spend $30 and get your cover with your Surface, right? Well, Dave followed up and called the Microsoft Store in Indianapolis and found out that this deal, the Surface Pro, is exempt from it. Now, that's not untypical. That's not saying that Microsoft doesn't think Surface Pro is not a PC, because it is. It's very common for a company not to give that deal on some of their newest hardware because they want to sell their newest hardware at full value and get the full money for it, not being paying off in someplace else with a $100 gift certificate. So it's not good for Surface Pro. So you're not going to get the $100 to spend somewhere else if you go buy a Surface Pro. Updates this past week. On Tuesday was Patch Tuesday, a massive Patch Tuesday. If you've not updated your systems yet, the updates, you know, if you're automatic, they should have updated overnight. If not, you can go there manually and go to Windows Update and get all the updates. If you're on Surface RT, there was a firmware update. So my initial check was 14 updates plus the firmware update included in that, and then on reboot, there were 7 more updates to be downloaded. So, and then, of course, on Windows systems, there's a lot of updates. I think I had as high as 32 on my desktop systems for update on Windows 8, and that included systems running Office 2013. So lots of updates this month. Make sure you go get them, because they did address a lot of issues on different software on Windows. Skype rolled out a new update for the Windows and Mac edition of Skype. This is not the modern app that appears in the Windows Store on Windows 8. This is actually the one that will run on Windows 7, Windows 8 on the desktop side. So this app cannot be used on Surface RT, in case you were wondering. But they've rolled out the 6.2 update for that, so that is available. Mary Jo Foley also had a great blog post about some discussions coming out of the chief financial officer, Klein. You know, he did the financial thing a couple weeks ago and didn't get specific questions about Surface RT and things like that. Well, he got a little more specific in this article, in this interview, and talks about, you know what, Microsoft, there is no plan B for mobile. This is where we're going. We are going this route. And there's some talk about smaller screen sizes that we could feasibly see either a Surface type device, or does it mean that we might see this Xbox Pro or this Surface Xbox Pro or whatever that is in a smaller, maybe 7 or 8 inch format? He certainly opened the door wide open for that, and a lot of different sites were reporting that information this past week. HP, Hewlett-Packard, you know, they had their WebOS, didn't do very well. In fact, they had to have a fire sale to sell off all their WebOS tablets, and some people got some really good deals on those types of tablets, if that's your thing. But it looks like they have decided they're going to put Android on some upcoming mobile devices, including tablets. So they're making their initial move into that that realm post-WebOS by putting Android on those tablets that they're going to build. Go to the Windows Phone blog. They've got eight hidden Windows Phone 8 settings you'll actually use. And these aren't hidden settings. What they actually are tips and things that to kind of help you personalize the system and Windows Phone and do things on it that you might not, that you may be aware of, or maybe you just not come upon it yet and you're setting things up. For instance, you know that you can tell people to, if they call you and you're involved in something else, you can actually send a pre-written text to let them know you're occupied. Let's say if you're driving somewhere and you want that to reply, you can actually set up an automatic text reply to say, I'm busy right now, or I'm driving right now. I'll call you as soon as I stop where I'm going. You actually have the ability to personalize the name of your mailboxes on Windows Phone. You don't have to leave them all called Hotmail 1, Hotmail 2, Gmail 1, Gmail 2, Yahoo 1. You can actually call them personal accounts and name them specifically and however you want to do that. You can increase the size of text by using the Ease of Access menu. You can change up the appearance of the lock screen icons on the screen and those that give you more information when the lock screen is on. You can change your email signature. A lot of people know there's one in there by default. You can actually turn it off if you don't want it, or you can personalize it and give it a little more personalization from you on that. You can add some buttons to the Internet Explorer address bar that would make it easier to access certain features when you hit the three-dot menu. You can filter your contacts. There's ways to protect your photos and videos with the automatic upload and uploading the best versions of them if you're connected to Wi-Fi. So lots of tips that are on the phone, but maybe you just haven't had a chance to get around to them. And that list maybe will help you walk through your phone and modify a few more things to make that phone even more yours. Some posts that that I've recently written on Windows Observer. I finally had to figure out how to fix the jumping cursor bug on my wife's laptop. She will take her laptop on the back porch and sit outside and do some writing and do some work. Well, let me tell you, this thing's been suffering from this jumping cursor for quite a while. The first fix I did for it was I locked up her touchpad. I disabled it, but it still happened. She was just finally fed up with it enough the other day that I had to get online and find a serious solution for it. Excuse me. And so I did some search. Apparently, this is widespread. It's not just specific to one OEM. It happens to a lot. I even saw one post and guy on Twitter said it happens to their MacBook Air. So I'm not sure what it is that's causing it, but I did find a great solution. It was thanks to another website, and it's called Touch Freeze. And if you go to the blog post, there's a link for Touch Freeze. You download it, you install it, it sits in a system tray, and it just automatically locks out things. It keeps the cursor from moving, and it stops that from happening. My wife tested it. It worked great. And that's the same report that I saw in a lot of the comments on the original post I sourced it from. So if you are having a problem with that laptop cursor jumping around and all of a sudden deleting big chunks of data, check this story out, download Touch Freeze, put it on your system. My wife's system is Windows 8, and it is working on Windows 8 despite the fact that it's 8 years old, at least the last date on the code on the Google Code website. Patch Tuesday, as I mentioned, already out. I did have one person reply via Twitter. They didn't know that Microsoft provides an ISO image that you can burn to CD or DVD to take these updates around to different computers that might not have a network connection or something like that, or you want to control their getting updated. But they do. They provide an ISO every month. You can download it, burn it to disk, and then use it to do the updates. So there's a post with the link to that. Travis did his final Windows Phone App Flow column this past week. And the main way he kind of closed things out for his 45th column on Windows Phone App Flow was tips for finding great apps. So he gives you some ideas on what to look for and kind of things to not let things judgment slip by, you know, revisiting apps that you might have tried months and months ago that have been updated now, and maybe some of those usability issues are fixed. But I do once again want to thank Travis for writing that column since November of 2011. And it was a great column, exposed a lot of different apps to everybody, and it created some great dialogue. And we are talking, and we will be seeing each other next week during MVP Summit, and we're going to talk further about maybe some new ways that Travis can contribute at WindowsObserver.com. And while we're talking about Travis, I want you to make sure you go check out InConnected.com, Entertainment Connected. He runs a great website that talks a lot of entertainment-related stuff when it comes to Microsoft, Xbox, and those platforms. So please go check him out over there. Did a kind of conglomeration post of the Windows Personalization Gallery. I noticed a couple of themes with space pictures in it from NASA. And so I went through and I kind of collected together what I thought were all the otherworldly themes in the Windows Personalization Gallery and put them into one blog post. So that's there available if you want to check that out. Speaking of Windows Personalization Gallery, I'm working on the details to meet with the team next week while I'm in Microsoft. That runs that little program. You know, there's a continuous open call program that if you are a photographer and you've got some great images, you can actually submit them and have them accepted to be put in one of the dynamic themes. I've been lucky enough to have 6 images so far published in several different themes. And so I've been in dialogue with them via email, hoping to meet with them next week and talk a little bit about that project and what that all is and do a blog post on that and then talk about it in the next episode of the podcast. So keep an eye out for that. Microsoft released some fixes last week ahead of Patch Tuesday for the Flash Player vulnerabilities, so you want to make sure those were downloaded onto your system. Being an old Commodore guy, I thought this was a neat story from CNET. An actual Commodore 65 prototype. Now, everybody knows Commodore 64 was one of the, I think, the top most popular computer ever made. And then, of course, they built the Commodore 128. They never did build a Commodore 65, but this was actually an engineering prototype that was functional. It's not functional now, but it sold for $7,600. So there's some really old tech selling for a nice little dime. But I just thought that was neat because I was an old Commodore 64 guy. I learned how to program BASIC on it, and I just enjoyed the heck out of that machine. I stayed with that much longer than I probably should have, but that resulted in me getting some pretty cool stuff from all the guys that were bailing on the Commodore 64 as well. So, my favorite add-in from Microsoft Research, it's called No Reply All. It's been updated to edition 3.0, got a couple of tweaks and fixes in there, and if you don't know about this plugin, you install it, when you do a reply all, it helps you lock that out. If you send an email, you can set a flag that will prevent somebody from doing a reply all. So it's very handy if you want to keep a discussion from getting out of hand. So you can check that out. Rob Margle, who runs the Windows Help blog, he's over in the UK, Microsoft UK, has got a great 41-second video of one of their student interns showing you the basic interface for Internet Explorer on Windows 8, the Metro version. So in 41 seconds, he basically shows you all that you need to know about using Internet Explorer 8 on Windows 8. And there are a few other student tips that are available there as well, so go check those things out. And then the last item, a bit of Surface discussion. iFixit is a website that does teardowns. They tear apart hardware and technology to tell you how fixable it is. On a scale of 1 to 10, how easy it is to fix a device. Well, of course, with the Surface Pro being released, they did their teardown, and they determined it is a number 1 on a scale of 10, so 1's worse. It is very non-repairable by you, the person. I think I read on the site it takes like 90 screws, adhesive. You have to be so careful taking it apart because you'll rip a cable. I mean, that's something we're not going to do. We are not going to dive into our Surface Pro or our Surface RT and attempt to take that thing apart to upgrade the hard drive. They're just not meant to be done that way. Just like an iPad, they're not meant to be upgraded either. However, Matthew Miller from ZDNet made a great point. For $100, when you buy your Surface Pro or even your Surface RT, you can get Microsoft's complete coverage for all of $100. That means if you have a problem with the Surface Pro, guess what the repair process is? Walk into the store, turn it in, and take away a new one. So for $100, is it not worth the investment to have that $100 kind of safety net in case something breaks? Now I get it. It's insurance. Many, many times we do not end up using insurance, but we pay for it. Well, we pay for the privilege of having it there in place. So I would spend $100 to have the availability of a walk-in replacement. I mean, I just did it this week. We had a major appliance purchase this week, and I opted to buy the plan that gives me 4 years of automatic replacement if they can't fix it. So you want to talk about being worth the saving the headaches. I definitely think something like that would be well worth it, especially with the Surface Pro or an expensive piece of tech gear. All right, so there you go, episode 80. Already 80 episodes of Observe Tech have been recorded. I appreciate everybody having a listen and keeping an eye on things. We love to bring you the news. We love to talk about it. And, you know, I'm hoping that next week I will have some news about this podcast, WindowsObserver.com, and some direction that will be taken. I've got some meetings lined up in Redmond and Bellevue to talk about those things. You guys are a terrific audience. I love being able to bring you this kind of information, so I appreciate your listening. So until next time, and oh, by the way, not sure episode 81 is going to happen next Thursday because I will be in Redmond, Washington, and I'll be involved in meetings and side sessions, so I most likely will be recording a podcast on Friday afternoon after I get that red eye back here to the East Coast and get connected with you, at least talk about MVP Summit to the level I can because it is NDA, so this non-disclosure agreement's in place. But anything I can share will be on Twitter. I'll post blog posts as I can and try to keep up with things that way as well. But until we meet next time, keep safe and make sure all your computers are up to date. Take care.